Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are here till 5 a.m. And then it is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6, as we are every weekday morning. It is Monday, so that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews, which we're about to do. And also Monday morning means it's time for my dad to tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. That's coming up later on. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Talk or text 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is to like us on Facebook, along with like almost 12,000 other fans. We're trying to hit 12,000. Help us do that by liking us now. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page as well. All right, let's do this. Colin Suter has been taking a few weeks off. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. But filling in, really doing a great job filling in, is Jim Leskowski. And our buddy Eric Childress is here. And it's time to review the new movies. So we welcome Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
All right. Before we get started, Eric, your podcast on Jim's network. You have two of them up already, correct?
Yes. The second one just went up this evening.
Okay. Tell everybody about it, and then Jim, you can tell us about your network and some of the podcasts that people can get on it. Eric, go ahead and tell us about the first one and the second one.
Okay. Well, the first episode, which we did last week, we had Colin Suter on, and we talked about at length. We talked about Hail Caesar. And the premise of the podcast is basically I'm going to talk about sort of just everything that I can possibly talk about is, with the entertainment industry. We talk about movies at length. We talk about DVDs, upcoming DVDs, and my choices for the top ones to rent and buy for the week, as well as some more in-depth stuff about the box office every week. And I'll be introducing more segments as we go along, as time permits, and we'll be talking about the Oscars next week, and hope to have a guest on every week. This week we have on my friend Eric Laws, who's a comic book expert, and we talk at length about Deadpool, just about the movie itself, and that as well as all the money it made this weekend.
Yeah, okay. Boy, did it make money. Holy
yep.
cow.
And
Jim, tell everybody about where they can hear that podcast, your podcast, and of course our good friend Jim Hankey's podcast about vinyl.
Oh, yeah. It is a tremendous honor to have Movie Madness, Eric's podcast, on board and a part of the Now Playing Network. Eric's doing a great job so far. And if you like what he says here, you're going to like his podcast. Jim Hankey also has a new episode of Vinyl Emergency this week. And both Colin Suter and myself just did a 2.5-hour discussion on the great George Miller for Directors Club. So there's lots to hear over on the network this week, and everybody can check it out over at nowplayingnetwork.net.
Nowplayingnetwork.net. Very cool. Okay, I noticed, Eric, that, you know, because we always have like a list of movies that we're going to talk about and who's seen what and so on and so forth. There's a remake of Cabin Fever.
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't even know about it until Tuesday of this past week. I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know it had been made already and that it was being released this week on VOD.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see it. I'm kind of baffled by why anybody would make. I mean, look, I'm one of the fans of that movie. I actually think it's pretty terrific. Mm-hmm. I actually am a real big fan of that movie. But that movie is essentially a remake of like five other movies.
And then to make it even more baffling is that they actually did sort of from what I've heard, and I've seen this thing, and from apparently what they did is they actually used the original screenplay.
The original screenplay that Eli Roth wrote.
Yeah, Eli Roth has credit on the screenplay. And even though, I mean, they say that's what they did, but there are noticeable changes here and there. Just a couple things. Mainly, it's the same damn movie.
I don't understand. That makes no... Was there, like, some legal... You know, because I know that sometimes they'll make movies in order to... You know, like, that's why they did... That's why Romero okayed Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Uh-huh.
Was so that he could get the rights back. Because remember all those years, Night of the Living Dead was free, and you could, you know, you could get like horrible VHS copies from anywhere, and everybody, you know, it was public domain.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, you know, Romero said, okay, yeah, go ahead, Savini, make a remake so that we can get the rights back. But that's not, I mean, did Eli Roth do some weird business thing that...
I mean, that's an interesting angle to think about. I mean, considering that they've made a couple direct-to-video sequels to Cabin Fever, there have been two other Cabin Fever Fever movies.
None of which I've seen, but...
Right, and you shouldn't.
Yeah.
But this one, this remake that they did, it's, I mean, seriously, it makes Eli Roth look like John Carpenter. And, I mean, if you thought, I mean, the original cast of that movie is not exactly something to, you know, really write home about and remember.
Yeah.
But man, do they look like a Hitchcock cast compared to these guys in this one?
Ugh. Wow. Okay. All right. Serena Vincent's a very nice woman, by the way.
Oh, yeah, in all many ways.
In many ways, but she's a very nice woman. She's not the greatest actress in the world, but she's a very nice woman. She was at a few years back. She was at Flashback, and she's very, very cool. But yeah, no. So all right, I don't understand it. I might watch it. I'm not really sure. I feel the need to.
Only do it out of curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only... But I think I'm going to wait till it's, like, on cable. I'm not going to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not curious enough to pay $7. Do you know what I mean?
No,
you know what I mean?
Not.
You know, so... All right. Well, all right, Cabin Fever, if you're interested in the remake of Eli Roth's ancient film, Cabin Fever, from, 9 years ago?
2003 it came out.
2003, so 13 years ago.
Yeah.
That was necessary.
You're clamoring for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, guys. We'll start out with the one movie that I did not see this weekend, and then we'll talk about all the rest of the movies all three of us have seen. So the first one we're going to talk about, Jim, why don't you tell us about How to Be Single?
All right. Well, this is based on the book of the same name by a Sex and the City show writer, which should tell you something right there. How to Be Single plays kind of like a reboot of the HBO show, only for a younger generation. Dakota Johnson plays Alice, a young woman who is in a relatively happy relationship with her college boyfriend. But then we cut to, I believe it is a few years later, and she's longing for something more and unsure of what she wants out of life. And she feels like she needs time to herself to figure herself out. So she moves to New York and she gets a job at a law firm where she meets Rebel Wilson, who treats life like a party and never wakes up in the same bed if she can help it. Along for the ride is Leslie Mann, who plays Johnson's sister. She's a doctor who puts her career above her love life and decided not to have children until she finally looked into a baby's eyes for 5 consecutive minutes. Alison Brie also shows up here, playing a marriage-obsessed single gal who frightens off guys maybe with her dating site spreadsheets. And she, oddly enough, came up with an algorithm that, you know, she helped, you know, create a dating website of sorts. Very similar to a character on that Hulu show, Casual. But Alison Brie is very loosely connected to this story because she occasionally hangs out in the same bar as the other characters, which is run by a ladies' man so determined to stay out of relationships that he doesn't even have running water in his apartment for some reason, but we sort of learn about that. You know, the truth of the matter is this is kind of, an ensemble piece, but no one really gets a satisfying storyline. There's just not enough time for that. And honestly, everything in this movie rang false to me. The audience I saw this with consisted mostly of women who did laugh quite a bit and seemed to enjoy themselves. So it's very possible there's just a disconnect here for me. But honestly, I hated this movie. I thought every interaction felt like it was out of a sitcom. Every personality was stale. The tone was very inconsistent. I didn't buy any of these connections or friendships. Like, there's these moments of drama, one involving Jake Lacy, who's kind of starting to become typecast. And in this, like, baby department store has a, you know, confrontation with Leslie Mann. I just didn't buy that. There's another involving Dakota Johnson and Damon Wayans Jr. and he has a young daughter, and that's really puzzling. So there's just scene after scene that feels like it wandered in from much better romantic comedies that we've seen many times before. So How to Be Single is lazy, unfunny, and kind of offensively bad, in my opinion. A better title for this movie would have been Dare to Be Stupid. I just couldn't stand this
movie. And then they would have had to cut a check to Weird Al, and he always needs a check.
Which would be fine.
Exactly. All right, guys, hang on. We got to get Eric's opinion on How to Be Single. That was Jim's. He didn't like it, and we'll find out what Eric thinks, too. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. We've got a break here for the news. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning, and we're heading into Monday morning. My dad will be telling a joke a little bit later on because it's a jokey time. And much more right here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews are where we're at. And before the break, before the news, Jim Laskowski told us that he did not enjoy How to Be Single, the new romantic comedy that opened just this past weekend. And now we're going to find out what Eric thought of it. Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty simpatico with Jim on this one. I mean, as movies based on self-help romance books are concerned, it makes He's Just Not That Into You look like Love Actually.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and you would think that a movie based on a self-help book, it might not exactly ring any bells in the dramatic department, but you think that it might possibly have some insight into what the title actually proposes, which is How to Be Single. And this movie is about as clueless as the women in the film. It doesn't really have a clear statement as to exactly what one might need to, to be single. You know, how do you remain happy being single? How do you prevent loneliness being single? Do you take the Rebel Wilson path and just be a party girl? Or do you take the Alison Brie route and the Leslie Mann route, have a baby, or the Alison Brie route and have just look for a wedding? It goes without saying, Alison Brie's, big algorithm that she's spent all this time developing, that it narrows down all the dating sites until she finds the one perfect guy in New York City. And the one guy she finds is Colin Jost.
Oh.
Okay. So she should automatically go back to the drawing board there. Rebel Wilson shtick is I'm done with it.
Yeah.
She was funny in Bridesmaids. I thought she was funny in the first Pitch Perfect movie.
Yep.
I might have chuckled at the sequel a little bit. But, she's Vince Vaughn.
I agree with you, Eric, completely. And, I watched like one episode of that show, Fun Time Fun or whatever.
Right.
Funnest Night of Fun, or whatever the hell it was called. I watched one episode of that, and I was like, okay, I got a feeling that we've hit the glass ceiling on this one. And then when I saw the trailer for this movie, I was like, oh, God. I mean, it's just this.
Yeah, and that's all she does in this movie. That's all she does throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
And it's a movie that is constantly reminding you of better versions of this movie. You got Leslie Mann, who is in Knocked Up. You have Jake Lacy as the guy in an unwanted pregnancy situation, obvious child.
Yeah.
You have Anders Holm plays the ladies' man bartender. He was in a movie called Unexpected.
Right.
I was constantly reminded of all these movies, and then you get the Damon Wayans Jr. stuff is really, really awful, and then it gets to the point where Dakota Johnson, where she finally gets to the point after she's, gotten all this bad advice and done all these stupid things and just done everything wrong in the movie, gets down to the point where she's actually going to learn how to be single in the final 15 minutes of the movie. And it gets to a point where she's a montage of her on the windowsill, first reading Wild, and then immediately after reading The Bell Jar. I think that pretty much sums up the movie in a nutshell right there. How to Be Single is just awful.
Okay. All right. How to Be Single made $18.7 million at the box office. That's not nothing to sneeze at.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's not great, but it's not just not that into you numbers.
Right. Okay. All right. All right, Eric, tell us about Michael Moore's latest Where to Invade Next. I keep reading things online about him being really ill. Is that really the case?
He's got pneumonia.
And he's in the hospital.
He's in the hospital, yeah.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was supposed to be on Bill Maher's show last weekend, and just before then, he ended up in the hospital.
Yeah, okay. Well, we wish him well.
Mm-hmm.
But here's his latest movie, Where to Invade Next. And Eric, you told us about this. You saw it at Toronto? Or
Toronto is where it premiered. This was this is the first movie that Michael Moore had made in 6 years. He made it very quietly. It wasn't one of those deals where you knew he was making something and it was going to be this thing like Fahrenheit 9/11 or even Sicko. He kind of quietly did this movie and did a lot of stuff overseas about it, because the premise of the movie is that Michael Moore is trying to figure out how to, in not so final point, fix America. Like, why is America failing in all of these social projects and just general things that we should be doing regardless of cost or political affiliations and things like that. Just regular decent things that we could be doing. So he goes overseas into other countries and discovers how they do certain things over there. He talks about how finds out how France does school lunches and how prison systems are, and how people are hiring women left and right. And he's going there, and he basically he breaks down how everything is happening over there and why could it possibly not happen here in America. So what he does is he basically says, I'm going to steal your idea. In lieu of bringing a whole army over there, he's just invading the country himself, and he's planting the American flag there and taking their idea, and he's going to bring it home and save America. Which, in theory and in pure Michael Moore fashion, sounds like a really interesting idea. Except that you talk about shtick that's getting a bit old. The problem with this movie is that it feels more like a series of greatest hits from the Daily Show. And it feels like lesser versions of those sketches that were cut for time. Because some of the things are interesting, like Michael Moore, like a lot of politicians, he doesn't really have a lot of answers. He shows you things, and yes, everything sounds great and fancy and everything, but he doesn't really sort of propose, why these things can't happen over here. He doesn't really have the figures and numbers that a Daily Show might actually delve into to sort of propose or show the hypocrisy of why these things aren't happening. It's just that they're not happening here, they're happening there, and that should be enough to just make them magically happen over here. Some of the stuff involving the prisons over there is really a bit infuriating. Michael Moore's sort of simplistic stance on that. It's certainly a very watchable film. It really begins to wear out its welcome after about the first three or four segments, where there's definitely some funny stuff in there, but ultimately it just gets down to just kind of like, we've been down this road before. Michael Moore has done this stuff like this much better. He's backed it up much better. And yes, it's a kind of a training film for people to maybe investigate some of these things. But as a film, he doesn't really bring the solutions home.
Okay. All right. What about you, Jim?
I'm pretty much in agreement. I fall pretty much squarely in the middle with Where to Invade Next. There's a section in this film that I kind of wish he would do more, and that's Show, Don't Tell. There's a moment in Germany where we see, that country advertise its crimes and then posits, what would it be like if our country did the same? And I thought that whole section was kind of astounding. And I really liked that, even though, there's a raised score and everything. But, Moore has this weakness for broad brush kind of tactics and heavy handed jokery. Like when he's doing these interviews and practically going, wait a minute, your country does what? I kind of wanted to punch him in the gut, because, you don't have to play dumb. We know you did your research. We know why you're there. You kind of just don't have to, kind of get, hammy about it and be, silly. I know he's romanticizing a lot of these policies, but at the same time, there's no denying good intentions here in at least communicating them. But as a documentary, I do think it's flawed. It lacks focus. It feels too long. And, of course, Michael Moore has to be prevalent even after, somebody gives a very profound statement. He has to comment on that profound statement. So this isn't up there with Michael Moore's very best work, but I'm still giving it a very mild recommendation just because I did have, emotional reactions throughout a lot of this film.
Okay. I think I watched this movie 4 months ago. When did we get...
Seriously, screener in like November, December, like that.
It was November, I watched it immediately when I got it. I don't remember a ton of it except that I didn't like it. And you guys know my history with Michael Moore. I don't like the guy. I've never been a real big fan of his work at all. Like most of his movies make me, they infuriate me. Sicko being the only one that really didn't. But this one made me nuts. I was just like through the whole movie. He just pissed me off so much while I was watching this movie. I had to watch it. I didn't watch it all the way through because I was getting so mad. So I watched like about an hour of it or about 45 minutes of it. And then I turned it off. I was like, I got to do something else. And then I came back like the next day and finished watching it. He just drives me nuts. And this movie is full of the flaws that I find in Michael Moore's movies. And Eric and Jim, you both touched on it. His arguments are always very one-sided. There are a lot of things that he doesn't, like the big complaint that you have, Eric, is, he goes to these places, he likes what he sees, and then there's nothing outside of that. Like, he doesn't propose how they can be done here or how, there's nothing there. And yeah, I mean, it gets to the point where it is absolutely ridiculous how much he is in his movies. And comments on everything. The movie is really, it's really about him and about his shtick. Now there are certain things in the movie, like you mentioned, Eric, the prisons, the prison system in France, and how, these guys live better than I do.
Yeah.
And that kind of drove me nuts. I'm like, no, I if you do something wrong, you should be punished for it. You shouldn't be living in a really swank place that.
Right. And the fact that he gets one of the victim's fathers to like basically approve of it.
Yeah.
That felt very simplistic, very manipulative.
He does that all the time, and he's guilty of it. Everything that I dislike about Michael Moore is done to the 10th degree in this movie, and it made me absolutely crazy. Now, there were certain things in it that I thought were funny. I thought the school lunch thing, there were some funny bits in that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. But again, as you mentioned, Eric, and really astutely, that you could see this kind of stuff on The Daily Show, only better. I didn't like it, and the guy just rubs me the wrong way. I mean, I hope he recovers and he gets healthy and all that stuff. I don't wish to talk badly about someone who's in the hospital. I always feel weird about that, but his movies rub me the wrong way, and I don't like this one, but I do wish him the best, and I hope he gets well.
Of course.
So, all right, Eric, Jim, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys, Jim and Eric are with me, and we are going to talk more movies. We got more movies to review, and we're going to talk about the box office as well. Big box office for Marvel this weekend, and we'll get into that coming up. All right, 312-981-7200. The movie reviews will continue right after this on 720 WGN. Yeah. All I care about is- Morning, everybody. Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio. Seventh floor of the Trib Tower, and it is Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Jim and Eric are here. Jim Laskowski is filling in for Colin Suter. He'll be back in a couple of weeks, but he's doing a great job, and I thank him for being a part of it. And Eric Childers is with us as well. Let's get back to the movie reviews. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you,
and welcome back, Jim.
All right,
all right, Jim. Why don't you tell us about Zoolander 2?
Oh boy. So way back in 2001, we had a dim-witted male model named Derek Zoolander, played by Ben Stiller, and he embarked on a mission to expose an international conspiracy. Now it's 15 years later, and he's reprised the role. This time out, Derek and his former rival Hansel, played by Owen Wilson, are tapped by Interpol to investigate when a string of murders leaves the world's most beautiful people dead. It's not long before everyone realizes that Zoolander isn't just helping to solve the murders. He's also a target. The rest of this rather bare-bones plot deals with Zoolander trying to reconnect with his son, Hansel, and his quote-unquote family, and trying to figure out, who's behind a new conspiracy, as well as the return of Mugatu, played by Will Ferrell, who's engineering a fashion prison break of sorts. Penelope Cruz co-stars as an Interpol agent, and this rather overstuffed plot barely manages to hold interest, but I think people aren't walking into this for a cohesive story. They just simply want to know if it's funny. And much like the first one, it really isn't. I'm a huge fan of absurdist humor, but both of these films just kind of grow really tedious and awkward as they go on. And I know there are people who love the first one, so maybe they'll enjoy spending time with this character again. For me, it just feels like it's constantly trying too hard to please. The only times I crack a smile, much like the first one, involve, celebrity cameos, like Kiefer Sutherland, for example. But they are often very forced, wall-to-wall, to the point where, Derek Zoolander even says, hey, celebrity, what are you doing here? And I liked early on the Justin Bieber sort of jab at Instagram filters. I thought that was kind of funny. But the laughs here are few and far between. All the cameos are relentless. They don't really add anything to the plot. They just sort of act as like human product placement. So, and not to mention, there are some mean-spirited gags here, like, Zoolander making fun of his overweight son. And the thing is, I really want to root for Ben Stiller because I love the Ben Stiller show. I enjoy Tropic Thunder, but these Zoolander movies are anti-comedy to me. I know there's a fan base for the first film, but when I saw the trailer for this, I knew I was in trouble. This is a ridiculous cash grab with no originality. This is a dud. No, okay. No thanks.
All right. Eric?
It's not very good. I think I probably laughed maybe a bit more than Jim did, and mostly at some of the celebrity cameos. Clearly some of them really, really fall flat, but you mentioned Kiefer Sutherland, who I think has some really funny lines in this movie. Benedict Cumberbatch as this model, we're not sure if it's male or female, I think was really funny. And then I think Will Ferrell has a really, really funny bit towards the end of the movie when he's sort of explaining the master plan. I think that bit really, really comes home. But it's one of those movies where the big laughs that I had were, 15, 20 minutes apart, and there weren't really a lot of little laughs at all in between there. So, I thank Jim for recounting what the first film was about. Because I honestly didn't remember. I remember there was some rivalry stuff between Stiller and Wilson, and Will Ferrell was doing some evil plan, but that's really about it.
Yeah.
I remember, listen to your friend Billy Zane.
Which is still the best line in either movie.
Right.
You should listen to your friend Billy Zane is the most inspired line in either of these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the gasoline gag in the first movie.
Yep, absolutely. Really, those are the two things the three things that I pull from the first Zoolander that I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
You should listen to your friend Billy Zane. The Wham montage with the gasoline and the guys setting themselves on fire, blowing up. And and Bowie's cameo. That's it.
Okay. See, I don't even remember Bowie's cameo.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah,
that's it. All right, listen, hang on, guys. I'll let you finish. I'm gonna let you finish.
No,
I'm gonna let you finish. Speaking of cameos, I'm gonna let you finish.
Right.
Hang on a second, okay?
Okay.
We got to take a break. We'll come back, Eric. We'll finish his review of Zoolander 2. We got the news coming up, and after the news, Eric will finish, and I will tell you what I think of Zoolander 2. All right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. It is Monday morning. We're here till 5 a.m. I'm your weekday overnight dude. 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 on your weekdays right here on 720 WGN. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us. We're going to hit 12,000 fans, and we would love you to be a part of that. Maybe you can be our 12,000th fan. I can learn to speak. Facebook.com/NickDShow. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number and texts. Okay, Eric and Jim are here, and we're reviewing the new movies. And we were talking about Zoolander 2. Jim told us all about it and told us that he did not like it at all. And Eric was in the middle of giving his thoughts. So continue, Eric.
I don't think there's much more to say, frankly. It's not a very good movie. The cameos, I enjoyed some of them. Others fall flat. Will Ferrell's got a good bit at the end.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can say about it is that it's better than How to Be Single.
Okay. All right. Now, not having seen How to Be Single, I can't respond to that, but I can tell you that I thought this movie sucked. I'm not a fan of the first movie. There were things that I think the first movie's funnier than this one. I think the first movie had moments here and there, and when that movie was made, that was, you know, Will Ferrell was still on SNL at that time. It was before he took off on his own, and I just remember being very excited for, when I saw Zoolander. I was just very the first one. I was very excited for Will Ferrell because I loved Will Ferrell on SNL, and when I saw that he was sort of like the main goofy villain in it, I was like very happy. But you know, he just seems to be slumming in this one. And yes, he does have a couple of funny moments. Same holds true for Kristen Wiig, who I love. Kristen Wiig, I don't think there's a lot of funny stuff for her to do in this movie. The cameos do grow completely tiresome. There are a couple of funny ones. You guys both mentioned Kiefer Sutherland, who I think has the funniest stuff in the movie. But I don't get the character. I don't get the appeal. I don't think that the Zoolander character is funny. The stuff between him and Owen Wilson, you know, these guys are obviously clearly good friends. They've worked together many times. They've worked together well in other movies. But I just don't get this thing. Who are these movies for? Are they for people who follow the fashion world? I mean, is that what we're not getting as like three guys who clearly don't give a crap about fashion?
It might have been funny back in 2001 when, you know, he invented that character specifically for the fashion awards.
Right.
You know, and he was just one of a string of characters at the time. But it felt like just another SNL sketch, you know, turned into a movie.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like, and it still feels that way. There's some wonderful stuff for the eyes in this movie. Penelope Cruz, good God.
Mm-hmm.
And Olivia Munn, Aaron Rodgers is like the luckiest dude on the planet. And I can't wait to see her in that damn X-Men movie.
Yeah, I know.
Oh man. So there's a lot of really, you know, there's a lot of pretty people in this movie, obviously. Well, that's part of the joke. But I mean, the character's not funny. It's just, he's dumb. And let's do that joke 8,000 times in the movie. Look how dumb these guys are. That's it. And I grew tired of it real quick. So, no, I didn't like it. And it made 15.6 million over the weekend. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, Eric, because you wrote down on the box office. And it is a holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm sure the numbers will be adjusted once they get Monday's results in as well,
yeah, right,
the final stuff. So, all right. Zoolander 2, no. No. All right. All right, Eric, we've got our last movie to talk about, and it is the biggest box office hit of the week, without question. It made $135 million over the weekend, and that number could go up before Monday is over. Mm-hmm. And that is Deadpool. So, Eric, tell us about Deadpool.
Okay. Well, this is the latest film in the Marvel canon, at least in the Fox division of Marvel, the one that controls the X-Men series. When we first saw Deadpool, it was actually in the X-Men Origins Wolverine film that nobody likes from.
Well,
years ago,
it was funny because Dan Shigeru, Dan is a comic book guy, and he had to remind me. He had to remind me that Deadpool was already in one of the movies.
Yeah.
Remember that, Dan? You were telling me.
He show up in any other movies coming up? And I'm like, well, he was in the first Wolverine movie. And you're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, he was like the second bad guy that he fought on top of the thing. You're like, oh my God.
I had no memory of that whatsoever.
And that's the way that the filmmakers of this movie would prefer you have it.
Yeah.
Because they're completely rebooting the story. Deadpool is played by Ryan Reynolds, was known as Wade Wilson.
Does anybody remember who played him in the Wolverine movie?
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds played him in the movie?
Yes.
See, I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
I swear to God, the last Wolverine, I think the Wolverine movie I like was the one that was in Japan.
Yeah, like that's the good one.
That's a good movie, and I remember cool. Yeah. All right. Jeez, I can't believe Ryan Reynolds played him in that, too. All right, I'm sorry. I have no memory. I completely put that. You know, I was drinking then.
That's so great.
That might have something
to
do with it.
That is great.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
But so Wade Wilson is a guy that is, before he becomes Deadpool, is a guy that gets paid to beat up other bad guys. He proclaims himself not a hero. He's not, he never wants to be. And he meets a lovely woman played by Marina Baccarin. And they form a really loving relationship, mostly based on sex, but they're very fond of each other. And just as they propose marriage to each other, he is diagnosed with cancer. And he's approached by a very mysterious-looking man from an organization that says he can cure them, can cure him if he comes, comes to them for help. So he does eventually. And it turns out that it's an organization not really bent on helping people, but mostly hoping to tap into the inner mutant strengths that Wade Wilson may or may not have and cure him in that respect. So he'll be self-healing and all these kind of things, but done in such a torturous fashion that it leaves him horribly disfigured and scarred, leaving him to put on the Deadpool outfit and mask. Okay, so the general plot, the origin story is not really what people are coming to see with this character. This is a character that is very different from many of the comic book characters that we've seen. For one, obviously, this is a very hard R-rated film, and it's done on purpose that way, because the Deadpool character, as I've been told, is kind of psychotic, and he hears voices. He frequently breaks the fourth wall in the comics. I was told there's even one comic where he breaks the fourth wall so much he actually kills the writers of the very comic that he's actually in. And that's exactly the route that they take with this character. From the very opening credits, this is not your normal superhero or comic book movie. Ryan Reynolds is constantly talking to the audience. He is making references to the other movies. He's making fun of the other X-Men movies and what kind of little budget they have on this one compared to some of the Bryan Singer's things. And to me, this is really sort of the best part of this film. I mean, this is obviously a very standard kind of origin story that is beefed up with this Ryan Reynolds sort of signature wheelhouse humor. And if you're a fan of that humor, you're going to get it in spades here. Ryan Reynolds is an actor that I have rooted for quite some time. I actually enjoy when he's sort of doing his Chevy Chase persona. He's just had to do it in a lot of really bad movies, including Green Lantern, which also they take a few jabs at here as well. Yep. And that's what I found enjoyable about this film. I found this movie much better as a comedy of sorts than as just another superhero origin story. But it did remind me a lot of the very first X-Men movie in that it was kind of short, sweet, to the point. Here are your characters. Here's a mission for them to go on, and then sort of leaving you with a taste for possibly maybe something more dangerous that they might tackle in the future. And clearly, with the amount of money that this movie made, they pretty much have the freedom to do whatever they want with this character. And I hope that in the next movie they maybe take a few more risks with that. But as what we got for starters, I was very entertained with it. I think Reynolds is really good in the film. I think him and Baccarin have really good chemistry, and so I was on board. It's not great, but I was entertained.
Okay. All right, Jim, hang on. We'll find out what you think of it, but we got a break, and then I will tell you what I thought of it. We're talking about Deadpool, the big winner at the box office this weekend, and Eric and I will discuss the box office a little bit later on as well. But, yeah, so we're going to finish up our reviews of Deadpool coming up right after we take a break. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here till 5 a.m. Monday morning movie reviews are happening. Eric Childress, Jim Liskowski, and for Colin Suter are with us, and we've been reviewing the new movies, and we're right in the middle of reviewing the big winner of the weekend, Deadpool, which made a ton of money. And Eric told us what he thought, which he liked it, and now Jim will tell us what he thought.
Well, it was bound to happen sooner or later, but I disagree with Eric. Oh, no. I was not on board with this. I don't know. I thought the humor was pretty scattershot and a little too manic for my taste. But I also felt like films like Kick-Ass and James Gunn's Super got to this type of darker take on a superhero movie much sooner. And with those films, I didn't feel like inundated with one-liners and penis jokes. And, you know, I know this does play like a satire at times, which is fine up to a point. The self-deprecating act started to grate on me. And, you know, throughout the script sort of points out these tropes and conventions, but then it pretty much just becomes a standard third act. I mean, it's not terrible. I laughed a few times, especially at the many movie references, because I am a nerd. And I did think Reynolds was having a blast. So, I mean, that's infectious in of itself. And the audience seemed to enjoy his take on the Deadpool character. But I just didn't really care. And, you know, the villain is pretty dull and uninspired. This sort of Family Guy rapid fire style to its humor just did not do much for me. One of the few redeeming elements comes courtesy of Wham, so I'm glad that's there. But, you know, this did not come across to me as the, like, they came together of the superhero genre. But at least it was short. I just was not a fan of this, and it could be just because I'm kind of jaded over superhero movies in general. So you can take that as you will.
Yeah, I'm 100% in your camp, Jim. And I think I liked it even less than you did. I'm so glad you mentioned Kick-Ass, because I kept thinking about Kick-Ass while I was watching the movie and how much I'd rather be watching that movie, which I think is much better and not as forced. And I just want to say this on a personal note. You know, we have Wham Wednesday here on the show, and Dan hates it. And so as soon as the ending credits came on, I texted Dan from the theater explaining to him that Deadpool loves Wham. So, boy, that's two Wham references in two
that we've movies. Made.
Wow. All right. Okay. I grew tired of this literally at the 10-minute mark. I was like, okay, this is just not going to go well, because it's just one snappy one-liner after another every 2 seconds. And I saw it with Mike View, my friend Mike, and we both, like, 10 minutes in, the audience is roaring. Let me just say this. Obviously, people are enjoying this movie. You know, the audience I saw it with, I saw it Friday afternoon or Friday evening, and the place was packed and people were roaring. So it's hitting the crowd that it wants to hit. I'm just not part of that crowd, clearly. Mike and I just kind of looked at each other and were like, wow, because I think I laughed out loud maybe 3 times, and the one time I laughed, the hardest I laughed was at a really bad joke that T.J. Miller tells in the bar. Like, he tells a good news, bad news, you know, how long do I have to live joke? Do you guys remember that?
I remember he tells a joke. I don't remember the punchline.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. If the joke is, his doctor says to this guy, you don't have very long to live. And the guy says, really, how long do I have? And he goes, 5. And the guy goes,
right.
5 what? He goes, 4,
oh, yeah. Okay.
3,
right.
2. And I went, ha, 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 ha. That was the hardest I laughed the whole movie.
That's crazy.
And I love Ryan Reynolds. You know that. I really do. I'm a fan as well. I actually like Green Lantern. I know I'm the only one. I like that. And I like it better than this. But I really, like, every 2 seconds, there's some smart-ass remark or some penis joke. And I was just like, come on. And a few of them are funny, and I don't know, man. I don't are we supposed to care? Because I don't know what universe this movie takes place in, because in the universe, evidently, I guess Wolverine exists, but so does Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
like, what the hell?
That's part of the comic shtick, though, is that it's so meta. It's meta kind
yeah,
of thing.
That did not work for me at all. Like,
he's commenting on the different people playing Professor X, for God's sake.
Oh, I know that. And then what time frame does this last X-Men movie take place? I get all that. I just don't know. So does that mean that we should be invested in this?
I don't think this is a movie about investment. Well, I don't think it's that type of movie.
Yeah, I know.
I know that they're really trying to sell the relationship stuff, and I actually think that stuff is some of the stronger stuff in the film. And they got the overriding theme of whether or not he's going to actually be a hero and that kind of thing. But watching this movie, I was not looking to be invested in that level.
Well, I was. They pulled me out of it immediately, man. I honest to God, like after the 50th quip, I was like, I'm not. This is. I don't care. And a lot of the stuff he says just isn't funny. And some of it, like I said, I was just like, wait a minute. If he's making Hugh Jackman jokes, the biggest laugh in the movie for me takes place at the end, and it involves Hugh Jackman's face, which is, I think, it's the funniest moment in the entire movie. And yet, I still was going, well, wait a minute. What world are we in? And here's another thing. And I guess I wasn't supposed to be invested. Okay, fine. That's cool. But how is it supposed to be exciting when the two guys that are fighting at the end of the movie, the big battle when stuff is blowing up and things are flying around, neither of them can die?
That's the superhero complaint for every superhero movie.
That's not true. That's not true.
I mean, most of them, Nick.
It's not true. Like this guy, okay, he gets his he cuts off his own arm, makes a 127-hour joke, cuts off his own arm, and then it grows back. Okay, so he's shot like 8 million times, and it's he's fine. And the guy he's fighting can't die, except somehow. Well, I don't want to get into it. But so I'm watching these two guys. I'm like, what the hell? Who cares? That like this stuff can blow up and they're going to be fine. Why do I even care? And then normally I shouldn't be thinking that when I'm watching the movie. But I am, because I was just like, what is this movie? What are we doing? Are we supposed to be rooting for this guy? Are we not? Or should we just sit here and watch him make smart ass comments for an hour and a half? And it just didn't work for me. I don't want to give away the postscript thing, the thing at the end of the credits, which, of course, there is one because it's a comic book movie. There is one. It references a movie that I just wanted. As soon as that came on, I was like, all right, I just want to leave. And that's just a personal thing for me, because the movie that they do a satire of at the end, I think is one of the worst movies ever made. So I see, not only do I sit through the credits, then I get this. I'm like, oh, God. So anyway, it did not work for me, but evidently I'm not the audience. I am not the audience for this movie, but people love it, and God bless it. Hey, man, the audience went nuts when I saw it, and we're going to talk about people. This is a crowd pleaser for the crowd that likes this kind of stuff. I'm not that crowd, clearly, so I don't know. All right, Jim, Eric, tell us what we got next week. Jim, we're going to cut you loose, and then Eric and I are going to come back and talk box office. What do we got next week? I'm looking for
what we got next week. We got Race, the Jesse Owens story.
Right.
We have Risen, what happened to Jesus Christ's body story.
Right.
Directed by Kevin Reynolds.
What?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Oh,
now I got to see it.
I know you do.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Yeah, when I found that out, my interest elevated.
Man.
But still. and then you have The Witch.
Yeah, that's the one. There we go. Yeah. That's the one I'm looking forward to right there. Yeah, that's going to be a beauty.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah. All right, Jim. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks again.
Okay,
talk to you
man.
Next week.
Take care. All right. Eric, hang on, man.
Yep.
Take a break. We'll come back and we will talk after the news. We will talk about the box office for this week. The big winner, obviously, Deadpool. More coming up right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. My dad's going to tell a joke in about an hour or so, because it's a jokey time on Monday. But also, we did the movie reviews, but now Eric Childress comes back, and we talk about the box office. And Eric, tell everybody where they can read about your box office analysis, and also you can actually see your box office analysis as well.
Yeah, if you go to movies.com, the box office report is usually posted on Sunday. This one is going to be posted tomorrow. And then if you go to my podcast, the Movie Madness podcast, I actually talk about all the new stuff at length and give you some interesting insights into what the box office means for these movies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So we're going to talk box office. Before we do talk box office real quick, Eric, did you watch Vinyl?
Yes.
Oh, man. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm not there yet.
Oh, man.
Although there's one thing I did love about it.
Okay.
Andrew Dice Clay.
I was going to say, if Dice doesn't get nominated for an Emmy,
yeah,
he is awesome in it.
Yeah, I was watching it just really in a couple hours here before we were doing this,
yeah.
And I tweeted out, I'm just like, if you tell me, because I was like kind of on the fence about, I'm like, oh, I love Bobby Cannavale, but I'm not really getting into this too much.
Yeah.
And then Dice shows up, and I tweeted out, I'm like, if you tell me Andrew Dice Clay is in episode two, I will continue to watch this.
Uh-oh.
And then like 45 minutes later, I went, never mind.
I don't want to give anything away.
Right.
But, yeah.
You can't. You can't possibly,
no.
Really.
I got to tell you something, Eric. I love it, man. I am 1,000% into it. And I think it's 80 times better than The Wolf of Wall Street in terms of, like Scorsese's direction.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And Bobby Cannavale is awesome. And how about Ray Romano, man? You know,
yeah.
The thing about Ray Romano, like, he was on that damn sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was fine. And then he does, like, The Men of a Certain Age, which I adored.
Yeah, which I never saw.
And, oh, he's great on that. And it's really, really great. He's doing so much. Like, as soon as he turned, like, 45, I was like, oh, okay, this guy's doing some. This guy's doing. And he's great in Vinyl. He's tremendous in it. I don't know. I loved it. But, yeah, Dice. I wanted to mention Dice because I'm telling you, he's got to get, like, I'm not kidding. He's between this and Blue Jasmine. With all, also had Bobby Cannavale in it.
Yep.
Looks like, what's going on with Dice?
I just love the fact that Andrew Dice Clay has now officially been directed by Martin Scorsese.
And Woody Allen.
Yes.
Like, what the hell is going
and
on?
And your boy, Rennie Harlan.
And Rennie Harlan, of course. Yes. All right. Okay. By the way, that movie, better than Deadpool.
Or Fairlane?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, I'm just commenting saying, on.
Exactly. But I like that one. Yeah. I actually thought that one was funny. All right. Well, Deadpool made $135 million. Let's talk about how many records it broke and all that stuff.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. First of all, it's the highest grossing opening weekend for an R-rated film ever.
Wow.
The Matrix Reloaded was the top grossing film of that ilk before, and that was $91 million. And that was a sequel. That was Summertime. So, I mean, that's the depth of how well Deadpool did this weekend. I would clearly the highest President's Day opening, highest February opening, second highest opening day in the first quarter of any year except for Hunger Games.
Wow.
You know,
that's
so $47.5 million on Friday. That was better than American Sniper did. That was better than 50 Shades of Grey did last year.
What did you predict?
I was predicting low 50s.
Yeah, that's about, I was thinking 45, 50.
Yeah, because, and really, the R rating had something to do with that. Like, one, I didn't know exactly how far reaching this character was. I mean, it's, you know, Green Lantern didn't do well. And clearly the reviews have been very good for this film. But, you know, like Ant-Man last year, you know, did open to $57 million,
yeah,
and was essentially, you know, that movie I still say is a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Only did $180 million. Deadpool in 3 days has already outgrown Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I mean, it's like after Guardians of the Galaxy came on, did $94 million, it seemed like just, you know, Marvel can just do whatever they want now.
Yeah, you know,
in any division.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. I mean, this clearly makes a statement. The amount of money that this movie made clearly makes a statement. And I got to say this: the R rating, evidently didn't stop parents from bringing their kids. I can't tell you how many people on Facebook posted this,
mm-hmm.
And on Twitter and stuff, the complaints of people bringing their kids to the movie. The couple in front of me, who, by the way, showed up late. They showed up right during the opening sequence.
To a theater with assigned seating?
Yeah. No. It wasn't a theater of assigned seating. No, it was not. And so they bring in, and they've got what appears to be a 7-year-old and like a 2-year-old with them. And they sat.
That's too young.
Oh, way too young.
That's
and they sat. They sat in front of us.
Mm.
And the 2-year-old was crying and making noise and walking around. And it was just, man, if you should not. And listen, I'm a kid. I saw The Exorcist when I was 8. So
yeah.
I'm not one to pass judgment because my parents are the greatest parents ever. And they,
right.
You know, it's fine. And I turned out reasonably sane.
We're still here.
Yeah. But I still, I mean, you know your kids better. The 7-year-old seemed fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He didn't seem traumatized by it or anything. He was, you know, the scene where, like, Deadpool is trying to beat up Colossus and things are happening to him.
Yes.
The kid was falling off of his chair laughing.
Well, that scene is pure Holy Grail.
Oh, no question about it.
I mean,
yeah,
that's clearly an homage to the Holy Grail.
There's no question about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the kid was laughing his ass off, and it's a little, it's a gruesome scene.
Mm-hmm.
But like the kid was fine. I was like the 2-year-old. Why did you bring a 2-year-old? The kid's not even watching the movie. He's running around.
Right.
So anyway, $135 million, busting every kind of record. And man. Okay. So number two, Kung Fu Panda 3 with $19.6 million. That'll just barely make 100, right?
It should probably pass 100, if not on Monday by Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 200. It'll be like 230 million worldwide, but it's only open in like four territories overseas. So it still has a wide berth to go overseas.
Okay.
So it's probably going to make a ton more money. But in the U.S., it is most likely going to be the lowest grossing of the series.
Okay, How to Be Single came in third with $18.7 million. That's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not great. There have been other Valentine's Day films that have opened at this time.
What are some of the other ones?
Well, He's Just Not That Into You. You know, the Nicholas Sparks movies, with the exception of The Choice, of course.
Mm-hmm.
All of those have done better around this time. And it's, you know, I think the gals got their gal pals together and went to see
right.
this movie.
Right.
We'll see exactly how much it drops next week,
okay.
but it's probably going to end up somewhere. Probably get across 50 million, probably be somewhere around 55, 56 million.
Okay. Zoolander 2, 15 years between movies, 15.6 million.
Which is just about what the original made back in 2001.
Oof.
When ticket prices were less.
Yeah. Well, that's not good.
And you also have to wonder how many, because the number for Zoolander 2 actually grew over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering exactly how many of those tickets were actually kids sneaking into Deadpool.
That's a good, you know, that's a valid point, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a total valid point, yeah. And I think that's another reason why, you know, the movie did kind of as well as it did, is because it feels like they really acknowledge in the commercials, the advertising for the movie, that it's naughty.
Yes.
You know, and that, like, if you're 14 or something, you
mm-hmm.
so want to see this movie. You know what
yep.
I mean? That's brilliant advertising on their yeah, part.
Totally. No, you know, the commercials that Ryan Reynolds has been doing, the public service ads
right.
that he's been doing for testicular cancer and
right.
breast cancer and stuff
right.
like that, really, really, actually really funny and really well marketed. So they did their homework on
yep.
this. They did a really good job.
All right, so Zoolander 2, not a success. Number five is The Revenant, $6.9 million, bringing its total up to $159 million. Boy, number six, Hail Caesar. Whew.
Yeah.
Wow, $21 million in 2 weeks.
But then you have the Coen Brothers movie, and their movies don't exactly make big bucks.
Yeah.
So, you know, those movies are about, you know, critics, you know, keeping them their names alive more mm-hmm. than the public, you know, feeding them cash.
Star Wars, let's just make it a billion at some point, right?
You would hope. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to quite get there in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, it's only made $914 million.
I know. Poor babies. It's, you know, it's the number one grossing film in the U.S. ever. It's the third highest grossing film worldwide of all time. It's only the third film to do $2 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah.
Okay.
Much deserved.
And well, I mean, I agree, man. I totally
yeah.
agree. And not surprising. You know what I mean? Not surprising. Because,
no.
You know why? Because J.J. Abrams did it right.
Mm-hmm.
He did it right, man. And the movie deserves to have a massive audience. It was just, hey, man, listen, for me to talk about a Star Wars movie like that, and for, let me put it to you this way, for a Star Wars movie to make my top 20 and a Furious movie to not.
I am never going to forget that this movie was number 18 on your top 20 list.
Now, you know, the next Furious movie, they want to get Charlize.
Yes.
Yeah. Are they going to call it The Fast and the Furiosa? Because they have to.
They might as well.
They might as well, man.
Yeah.
All right. And then I just want to mention really quickly this. You mentioned Nicholas Sparks. Wow, man. This Choice movie, 2 weeks, it's only made $13 million.
Yeah, this might be the end for a while for the Nicholas Sparks movies. It's the lowest grossing of all of them, of all time.
Man. Okay, what are we looking for next week? Deadpool again, number one, you think?
Yeah, Deadpool's going to rule pretty much for the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
I think after this. Not until Zootopia opens on March 4th.
Right.
We'll really have any challengers. I mean, this week, you know, you heard what's opening, Race, Risen, and The Witch.
Right.
And then next week it's like Eddie the Eagle and something else that is not exactly triple nine opens, which looks could be
interesting. that looks good.
Yeah, that could be interesting. That's certainly the best. Looks like the best movie opening that week.
Right.
But there's going to be nothing to challenge this thing.
Okay.
But we'll be curious to see exactly how much it drops next week.
Yeah, I think it's going to. You know, people really enjoyed it, man.
I think it's going to hold well.
And all of my Oaken's a comic book guy. He went to see it. He loved it. And it's just me and Mike View are alone. And Jim. Jim didn't like it either.
And Jim. Yeah, you three.
We were all grumpuses.
So. Yeah.
All right, man. So we'll talk to you next week. And I can't tell you how excited I am about The Witch. That's the first movie so far this year that I've been like,
I've seriously been waiting for over a year and a half to see that thing.
Yeah.
Because, well, maybe not a year and a half, but I missed it. I got shut out. That was supposed to be my very first screening at Sundance in last year.
Yeah.
And I got shut out.
Well, I've been hearing about it. But Brian Tallarico, by the way, is quoted on the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard from him that I'm going to go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, everyone really likes it.
Okay, cool. All right, Eric, thanks, buddy.
Sure thing.
All right, read about his box office at movies.com and listen to him every week right here on the Movie Reviews, and we'll do it again next week.